Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Thursday, June 8th. I'm back podcasting from the condo cast here in Virginia Beach. To everyone in the Northeast dealing with air quality issues from the Canadian wildfires, I hope you're staying safe and mostly indoors and preferably listening to this podcast, which if you're hearing this, you are listening to this podcast. I woke up on, Tuesday, whatever day it started, and was like, does this smell like smoke? I thought I left the California wildfires behind. What is this? This is absolute nonsense. Anyways, joining me in the great indoors is none other than Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Things are good. It is a rare June day where we have like breaking real NFL news. That's kind of exciting. We have a really fun topic today, so I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, we have a literal banger of a podcast today because we have our next installment of the Flip the Script series covering who is going to be this year's Geno Smith. We have a quarterback coming up later on the show that's a few tiers higher in the rankings than Geno Smith, but and no disrespect to Geno, this guy, you may have heard of him. He's coming up later in the show, so that's coming up. But Andy, you're right. We do have to start with the news here, and I was going to call this like news, quote unquote, more like stuff we've been talking about for a minute now, yeah. But like we're actually kind of have some real percolations in it. We're talking Dalvin Cook. We're talking DeAndre Hopkins. Let's hit on Cook first, because as you mentioned this morning, we find out from Tom Pelissero that the Vikings are expected to officially release Dalvin Cook on Friday, according to his source. Basically, Pelissero says that unless a Hail Mary trade offer comes through, he'll be free to sign with any team starting 4 p.m. Eastern time on Friday. By the way, it's nice to be back on the official league clock calendar, even if East Coast sports time is absolutely terrible. But that's a problem for future Matt. The current Matt's talking about Dalvin Cook here, Andy, and there's been some whispers around the Jets and the Cowboys. The Dolphins have been the long kind of quote favorite to land him. Adam Schefter threw out this morning that Miami and Denver have been monitoring the situation for weeks and are the early front runners for his services. So we got a couple things going on here with Dalvin Cook. Most likely it sounds like he will be released on Friday, free to sign with any team. It is still possible though, Andy, that a last minute trade does take place here. But you and I talked about Alexander Mattison actually just on the Fresh Start New Beginning podcast a few weeks ago. So we don't have to go too deep on him, but focusing on Dalvin here and his possible future, any of those landing spots stick out to you as like, hey, I would actually really love that. Or is there just kind of, he's going to mess up any of these backfields that he goes to?
Yeah, well, he's going to mess up a lot of planes if he goes to New York. And that's been kind of a weird wild card over the last couple of days. So that to me is probably the most surprising potential destination. It would still shock me, even though there's been, you know, some buzz about it. I think Miami is the most obvious, right? He's a clear upgrade. He's got obviously a history in the region for whatever that's worth. Not a lot, right? But it's just a ripe spot. And Coach McDaniel obviously knows what to do with talent. It would be great. I think the essential thing to realize with Dalvin is that he's as good right now as he's ever going to be again, right? 28 years old. We're not talking about like an ascending player. He's probably not going to return to the level that he was at in like 2020. Yeah. But this is still a good running back. Everything looked good last year. You know, when the line was banged up, he wasn't great, had some inefficient games, but overall it was a good season. All the yards after contact per attempt numbers look good. The missed tackle numbers look good. He's not like in precipitous decline or anything like that. Like we can feel good about Dalvin Cook going into this year. I haven't moved him in my ranks yet because this was already kind of baked in. This is just, you know, the card is finally about to be played that we've all been expecting for a really long time. So we sort of knew this. I think Miami is the friendliest spot in terms of just explosive offense. You know, if you're talking about a team that could just average 28, 30 points a game, it's the Dolphins. That would be a great spot. It would obviously, you know, there's a bunch of like late round flyers there in the backfield already, and it would kind of wreck things for them. But it's not, you know, we're not talking about players we're not talking like a Brees Hall situation where their value would maybe come crashing down. We're not talking about, like, you know, he goes and mucks up everything for Tony Pollard. I think fantasy managers should just sort of, I don't know that he ends up in Denver, but I think you should file away the fact that there was real talk about Denver as a destination, because that just adds to the concerns about Javonte Williams that have been there for months, right? Since the injury, it's a pretty significant knee injury. And the fact that they might be interested at all tells us something.
Quick question here, jumping in. Andy, on that, or even Matt, about Dalvin Cook. Personally, I own him in a few dynasty leagues. What should I do right now?
A selfish question. We our favorites.
I mean, I actually think that, like, people who have Madison right now, it's a great time to shop him, right? There's going to be a little bit of excitement about him. There's still a bunch of other, there's still some musical chairs that are going on at the running back spot, right? Like, something could still mess this up for Alexander Madison. He's a good player without being like an elite rusher or anything like that. And guys like that are always dangerous. So I think it's a good day to shop Madison. I think you ride this out. Like, if you think you're a contending team this year with Dalvin Cook, you're not going to find something better than Dalvin Cook. I don't think anybody's going to trade like next year's number one pick for Dalvin Cook. So I would just ride with him. Like, I think Dalvin Cook has a really short shelf life as a dynasty option. And if I was a contending team, I would roll with him. And if I was clearly a rebuilding team, I would try to flip him for whatever I could.
Yeah. And I don't even know that you'd get like necessarily, I don't even know you'd get like a first round pick next year for Dalvin Cook. Cause everybody knows, like, yeah, what you said, Andy, that this is probably the last year that you're going to get anything really, really great out of him. And the landing spots are interesting. Definitely agree that Jets would be an outright disaster. Cowboys would be pretty problematic for, would be super problematic for Tony Pollard, although I still think they do need something else in that backfield behind Tony Pollard. I think Cook might be, I think you're kind of, if you're Tony Pollard, I know Colin doesn't want to hear it, but I think you're kind of hoping that Zeke comes back. I think you're kind of hoping for like a Leonard Fournette type of back. Dalvin Cook, I think, is a step above, a step or two maybe above those two guys at this point, that he would come in and legitimately threaten Tony Pollard's early down workload. And that would be problematic, even though I think they do need a second pitch for Tony Pollard. The Miami one's interesting, of course, because, as you mentioned, he's got ties to the area. I also noted this too, and I was trying to find the numbers and I couldn't find it off the off my dome here, but I did, you know, just recently chart Justin Jefferson for reception perception, and there's a, like, at least several games where Dalvin Cook is ripping off like big runs still. Even if he wasn't like a consistent rusher, he's definitely a declining player. He still had a little bit of big playability left in him last year. Again, just like multiple times, it's like, oh, Dalvin Cook rips off like a 40-yard touchdown run or some type of big plays, which might increase the yards per carry, the yards per game, stuff like that, overinflated because of those big plays. But hey, that would fit in well with a Miami offense that wants to be explosive, right? And Mike McDaniel was asked about it this morning, and, you know, he said, I wasn't born yesterday. Like, he is a guy who says a lot in press conferences sometimes, or says a lot and says absolutely nothing. So I think he's trying to learn his lesson there. I think Miami's the favorite, and yeah, you're right, Denver, I still just don't know where we stand with Javonte Williams, right? He got in some more participation than I think people expected in recent practices, but I just feel like, you know, and I've had a lot of Jerry Jeudy discourse that I didn't want over the last few days. I just feel like everything's on the table for Sean Payton in terms of who's going to play what roles, who's actually important to him on this offense. And if any of these dudes are even going to be like on the roster next year, other than Marvin Mims, his guy, I think that's about it.
Yeah. The funny thing about that team is it's really just, you know, right now anyway, it's just Samaje Perine behind him. And Perine is set up all of a sudden for the best year of his career, whatever that means. Right. He's also not a super efficient player, but it would certainly be interesting. And just again, the fact that Cook is being tied at all to the Broncos, I think, says something.
Okay, next piece of quote news stuff we've been talking about, DeAndre Hopkins. I had really hesitated to talk about Hopkins at all in the podcast until something actually happened. Well, something did happen. He was released while I was on the road, and recently He's taking his first visit. Tom Pelissero again reports that free agent wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins is slated to fly to Nashville on Sunday for a visit with the Titans, according to sources. He reminded us that D-Hop and Mike Vrabel worked together in Houston. Now Vrabel's team gets the first visit with Hopkins. And he also noted that the Titans aren't the only team in talks with Hopkins, but this is the first official visit and shows there is mutual interest with Tennessee. Andy, I'm curious what you think about this, because I was a little perplexed at why people were confused by this one, because have you seen the Titans receiver depth chart? That's my first retort. Like Treylon Burks, maybe. I still have that. He's like one of the young guys I have a lot of questions about. Just in terms of, I think he can be a useful NFL player, but like, is he going to be a true number one receiver? I think that is a wide open question at this point. Secondly, everybody immediately responds with, well, the Titans should be rebuilding. Why is Hopkins going to a team that is kind of retooling, whatever? Titans are not rebuilding. Mike Vrabel is not rebuilding. People have been trying to wish cast rebuilding on the Titans for the last 2 years, and like they ain't going to do it, okay? Like, if Will Levis doesn't work out and they actually are bad, they'll just take another quarterback next year. Like they're not like really a true rebuilding team. So I found it confusing why people found this confusing, Andy.
Yeah, they're right there in terms of the division, right? Like that was they're right there. And if people expect the Titans to just concede the next, I don't know, 5 years to the Jaguars, it's just not going to happen. They're really close, right? Like you still have Derrick Henry at the tail end of his prime. This is one of the most glaring positional needs that literally any team in the NFL has. So it shouldn't be surprising for them to be interested. It would, you know, as you're suggesting, I mean, it would just be crushing for Treylon Burks, right? Like, I don't think Tennessee can support more than one viable fantasy receiver. That would clearly be Hopkins. You know, he still has among the best hands in the game. He's not vintage DeAndre Hopkins. Maybe he's only got like one big season left. But that's right now. And this would just be crushing in redraft for Treylon Burks' fantasy value. It's always, you know, we're just talking about Alexander Mattison and Burks is a little bit the same thing. Like, whenever a player's like total fantasy value, whenever it really comes down, we're talking more about like opportunity and volume than we're talking about the just screaming talent of the player.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous situation because talent doesn't go away, but volume can sure go away, right? And that we would definitely be facing that with Treylon Burks. So it's not a particularly surprising team to be linked to DeAndre. It's should go without saying, it's not the most exciting landing spot, right? Like if you have big dreams about him going to the Chiefs, the Bills, wherever, like some really rich offense that's gonna, you know, that's gonna produce 35 points a week, that ain't the Titans. But volume would still be there for him. He's still DeAndre Hopkins when he's healthy and playing. You know, we're talking about a guy probably at the tail end of his career as well. So he, like Cook, is just like this is as good as it's ever going to get going forward. I have him right now kind of in the wide receiver ranks around like 16-17, and that was anticipating a better landing spot than Tennessee, so right. this would be one of the few spots where I would probably knock him down a peg or two.
I love a lot of what you said there. First, just on Hopkins before we bring it back to the Titans, number one, I think he can still play. I don't think if you're sitting down ranking like top 10 receivers in the NFL, you're including DeAndre Hopkins in that anymore.
Yeah.
Number one, the position is just too good. In 2019 and 2020, I think I read these stats off the reception perception metrics with when Dalton. Okay, so I won't repeat myself. I did read those off on a few podcasts, but it's clear that he's gone down in terms of his individual play from like elite level in 2019, 2020. The last 2 years have been closer to like really, really good starting receiver, maybe like a good number two receiver. You know, I think that's why it's so perfect to think about him in Buffalo, because he's got Stephon Diggs across from him. Like, I don't care how optimistic you are about Treylon Burks, like, he's not going to be that guy this year. And I am so glad you said that. If you're making one of these hype threads or whatever about a player, and the first point you make is look at who else is on the depth chart, you're already in a tough spot, especially about an unproven player. If it's like AJ Brown, and you know, look at who else is on the Titans roster, it's like, okay, well, AJ Brown's a proven elite player. that, I mean, that, by the way, that's your first point, like proven elite player. This is like prospect people like might be good and fragile target share comes in with DeAndre Hopkins here. I agree. It would be kind of a disaster. It would be disappointing for Hopkins. It would be disappointing for Burks. It'd be good for the Titans offense though. And let's just hope like third time's the charm with veteran wide receiver towards the end of the rope with them, because they went after right. Julio Jones, they went after Robert Woods. Hey, we're going for DeAndre Hopkins here. Third time's a charm, baby. Let's hope this works out. Chigo Okonkwo, also another guy that would be kind of disappointing. People have high hopes for Chigo Okonkwo based on early drafts. This would be disappointing for him too. So it makes 100% sense from a real football perspective. I think from a fantasy angle, this is for everybody involved, unless you think Ryan Tannehill should be the next Geno Smith, and he's not a guy that either of us nominated.
Good transition. Holy cow.
That would be the only thing you'd excited for. So yeah, let's get right into it. Flip the script. This is episode 3 of our summer series that we're doing here in June. We are trying to look back at the biggest surprises of last year and try to predict who are going to be the biggest surprises here in the 2023 season. We've alternated between, we've mostly done teams. This is actually our first player, which I'll peek behind the curtain here and tell you that we only did that because of the quarterback we have coming up later on the show, because player quarterback synergy. That's great job by Colin there on that one. This episode is who's going to be this year's Geno Smith. Andy, let me lay the ground rules here. If you're not familiar with the series, and Andy, this is your first episode here, we're going to throw out some candidates. We're going to narrow it down to finalists. And then you and I are going to rank, and then we're going to try to vote on the winners here. How does that sound in terms of a June offseason? This is sort of kind of close to your secret list podcast that you love to do.
I do love a secret list more than anything, but this is a really fun concept, and it's perfect. Like it's almost unnecessarily complicated too. I like that. I like that. Everything about it. This is such a good off-season podcast topic. And I also just love talking about Geno Smith's 2022 season, which is one of the most, I don't know, in the time that I've been doing this, it's just one of the most surprising things that I've seen.
Yeah, right. And I think that's why this episode is particularly tough, because really it's about finding dark horse top five quarterback candidate. Like, yes, if you forgot, Geno Smith was the QB5 in fantasy last year. Geno's journey and his story was so unique, and it's going to be really tough to replicate. Like, we're not looking for an exact vagabond veteran rags to riches tale necessarily here. I think it's just mostly about picking, for me, I thought it's mostly about picking the most shocking QB1 performance of the year. Like just guy that has this. And I also, by the way, like I ruled out, and I think we can all rule out like 2022 Justin Fields types, basically like a former first round pick launches himself to fantasy glory because he can run. So apologies to Anthony Richardson, not going to be included in this. Frank tried to throw out Trevor Lawrence when we were talking about this off camera last episode. Like, no. People are, by the way, this has to be somebody like you don't have to reach for in the draft, like a guy that you can get after the top 12 quarterback. So Trevor Lawrence types, Anthony Richardson types, they're eliminated. But before we get to our candidates here, Andy, you talked about the Geno Smith journey. Let's revisit that a little bit. Were there any signs and signals we could have taken to see this coming in terms of Geno Smith's year last year?
Yeah, that's the great thing about it, is that if there were, they were minimal. And you had to read an awful lot into Geno's performance, like in a relief role for Russell Wilson the year before, which was like surprisingly not terrible initially, right? Like it was. You're like, okay, that was pretty good. But there was nothing that would have led you to this season that Geno had. Obviously, like we can talk about his numbers entering the 2022 season. Had not completed 60% of his passes in the NFL. More interceptions in his career coming into last year than touchdown passes. The career YPA was 6.9. Was just verifiably, you know, widely considered not good. so and a veteran too. So not somebody where you'd expect, okay, the light's going to go on at this point. There's just not a lot of there's not a lot of instances like this in NFL history. Like maybe, I don't know, it's a little bit of Ryan Fitzpatrick in it, right? Like Ryan Fitzpatrick obviously put together some great games and great stretches late in his career. But I mean, Geno went and led the damn league in completion percentage, and it wasn't, Seattle doesn't throw to its running backs. It wasn't like on a bunch of short stuff. It was like real eye popping throws to great receivers. He just made a leap that we just don't see very often. My other favorite thing about his season is that he won the Comeback Player of the Year award, and what was he coming back from? He was coming back from being considered by everyone to be bad at football, right? Like that award always goes to a great player who's coming
with
back
respects,
from
a, with respects. I do have to note, you know, there have been some hardcore Geno Smith truthers for like a very, like, you know, that we are, there are dozens of us. I'm thinking like Greg Rosenthal from the NFL, Stephen Ruiz from The Ringer, and like a small segment of people have been hardcore Geno backers for a long time. So I do want to just give those people credit because they deserve their victory lap. But regardless,
Matt, to that point, I used to work with Stephen, and he said it last year really early when it was obvious that Geno had taken a leap. And I'll never forget this. He said, Geno Smith isn't the step QB. He's the QB that stepped up. And I'll never forget that when it comes to.
I'll just say, like, the numbers weren't with you. Like, no numbers were with you.
Nope.
I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of evidence to go on. And again, he had played reasonably well in relief of Russell Wilson, but there just wasn't anything in his career that would have suggested that this guy is going to be a Pro Bowler and that this guy is going to, you know, this guy's going to actually have hardware at the end of the season. He's going to lead your team to 9 wins. Like he was great. He was phenomenal. It was certainly eye opening to me. I loved everything about his season. It's an incredibly rare example. Again, to his credit, the only other comeback player of the year stories that I think are even comparable to Geno Smith are like, John Kitna had a year like that, and Jim Harbaugh had a year like that, where like they win this award because everybody just thought of them as a punchline, and then they leveled up in such a dramatic way that at least for a season that it had to be recognized.
I mean, Geno was literally punched by a teammate in New York. Like he was certainly a punchline for the New York Jets. And I do think you can tell the funny thing about the Geno thing is, I think to me, my lesson from it is, one, stick to the facts, and also use your imagination in a weird way, because I agree with you that if you looked at Geno's career from like a box score standpoint, it's not good. It was weird that almost any other, and I think this is where some Geno backers would assert like he was not bad, he was just like completely treated unfairly, essentially. Because if you look at most like young quarterbacks that flame out in their first spot, they'll at least get like, I mean, dude, some of these guys on this list we're talking about, like, people still have some hope for. Geno was just immediately cast into like a backup role with, I think, the Chargers and then the Giants. You know, he was the guy who was they benched Eli Manning for. Like, he was never really given another chance until this one. And also, so I think you could use your imagination there, but like the stick to the facts thing, 5-1 touchdowns interception ratio when he was a relief of Russell Wilson in 2021. And the thing I wish I had just, honestly, Andy, the thing that threw me so far off the Geno Smith thing and why I called the Seahawks quarterback situation unserious is because they, and I blame them, they kept Drew Locke in the like discourse for so long. You know, they kept calling it a freaking quarterback battle. I think I could have been slightly more open to, hey, Geno Smith has a good, maybe he has a decent year this year because like Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf are really good. Okay, like they're really, really good. They're the best, if not one of the two or three best receiver duos in the NFL heading into last year. And like, I think Pete Carroll's a good coach. I was more on the Pete Carroll side of the debate than the Russell Wilson side of the debate during that divorce. Mm-hmm. But because they kept Drew Locke in the mix so long, it was hard to see. It was hard to see it. So I think we have some parameters though to lay out this one. But yeah, it's the most surprising thing that we've seen in a while, and I don't think we're going to see anything like it. But I think we have some parameters to follow with Geno here. Really good supporting cast, has shown, you can tell yourself a story why he, you know, deserves a chance or another chance here with some of these guys. So let's get into the candidates here. And I want to throw my first one out here. I put Sam Howell slash Jacoby Brissett for this one because Jacoby Brissett definitely fits the mold here. He's a guy who's flashed. He flashed last year. He was really efficient with the Cleveland Browns prior to Deshaun Watson being reinstated. I think Jacoby is a solid, really good backup level quarterback. And then I put Sam Howell in here too, just because I think he's at least intriguing. Dalton thinks he's like the best quarterback that's ever played. My dad thinks he's like the best quarterback that's ever played. But yeah, I think that these two guys are in as good a position as any, because similar to what I just said with Geno, hey, Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf are really good. Terry McLaurin is really good. Jahan Dotson's awesome. Curtis Samuel is a really good receiver as well. If you've got guys in the backfield, Eric Bieniemy sounds like he's coaching these guys really hard in the offseason. So I think they're at least a candidate to be the surprising quarterback performance of the year.
Yeah, I think if we wanted to find somebody who was like just like a perfect sort of note for note comparison to Geno, then Jacoby is probably closer, just because veteran, we've seen a lot of him. People have a notion of what they think Jacoby Brissett is. So if he were to like seriously level up, it would really fit this. Sam Howell is right. You know, it's the middle of summer and we can spin a great tale about almost any player in the NFL. And so it's kind of fun to do it with Sam Howell, because he also has like he's got a rushing element to his game. You know, like that guy ran for over 800 yards in a collegiate season. So there's, you know, he's got a little dual threat there too, and a stellar receiving core. Absolutely stellar receiving core. Dotson was awesome. Samuel is a really good player. And then Terry McLaurin we're still waiting for somebody to unlock the huge season from Terry McLaurin, but it's hard to believe that it's not out there somewhere. So this is the right environment to find that guy. So I think it's weird to call Sam Howell that player, because we don't really have, you know, we don't have a book on Sam Howell. Sam Howell isn't like certainly a punchline of a player, and he's not, you know, we don't like the fantasy scouting report on Sam Howell isn't fully written as it is on Jacoby. You know, I think we all in our head have Jacoby as like a high end backup guy that can win you a couple games if your starter is out for 2 months. Right. Like, But it would be shocking if, you know, again, you look at the season that Geno just had. He threw 30 touchdown passes, and right. he'd almost not thrown 30 touchdown passes in his career to that point. So, like, if Jacoby did that, total shocker. He's this team is a strong candidate. Like, this team quarterback situation is a very strong candidate. Yes, I agree.
And I think the punchline part of it is Washington. Like, there's, let me tell you, yeah. What if you really thought about it, it is kind of a ridiculous notion. Well, not even if you thought about it, it's a ridiculous notion that the snake oil that they've been selling about Sam Howell, if it doesn't hit, I mean, if it works, then like they're gonna look like geniuses, and Dalton's gonna look like a genius, right? But if Sam Howell's just like, well, that guy played like a fifth round pick, what the hell are we expecting? Like, oh, that's pretty classic Washington stuff. They're still not out of the stink of the Dan Snyder era. It would definitely be a punchline. So I would say, Andy, I think if we're making three finalists here, I think this Washington team quarterback, Howell for several reasons, Brissett for several reasons, I do think they belong on our finalist list. Do you agree or no?
Oh, I agree. This is about as close as it gets. Until I get to my favorite candidate, this is about as close as it gets.
Oh my God! Please don't stick to this podcast so you can get to the player interview we have at the end of it. But you definitely don't want it before that. You do not want to miss Andy's nomination here. By the way, just for note, current expert consensus rankings. We've got Sam Howell at 30, QB 30, and Jacoby Brissett at 35 on Fantasy Pros. So, yeah, I mean, obviously not a lot's expected there. We don't even know who's going to start week one. I'll nominate Matthew Stafford here, quarterback 19. Again, you know, he's not a punchline, right? We've seen Matthew Stafford win a Super Bowl very, very recently. We've seen him be a great quarterback very, very recently. So he doesn't necessarily totally make sense in that. In that vein of it, but he's definitely a guy, again, expert consensus rank quarterback 19. Like, people are definitely skeptical of the Rams, but it wouldn't take much for him to have an incredible season if he just stays healthy. Like, he didn't play well last year, but the guy was dealing with like a neck injury, an elbow injury. I mean, he was getting creamed by, I've seen a lot of bad offensive lines in my day, Andy. I don't think that like I've seen one that was drawing quite as dead, like drawn dead right away from the first snap of a game, quite like the LA Rams were last year. So you know, maybe they're slightly better. And the funny thing about the Rams is everybody wants to put them in the Caleb Williams sweepstakes. But like, if Stafford and Kupp stay healthy, this offense is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, it's going to be too good. Yeah. This works because nobody's going to fight you for Matthew Stafford in a fantasy draft, probably even in Superflex, right? Like certainly in a one quarterback league, if you're in a salary cap draft, you can throw him out for a dollar. You'll get him for a dollar. Nobody's going to get into a bidding war over Matthew Stafford. He's a year removed from 41 touchdown passes. Right? Like he was through a bunch of interceptions a couple of years ago, but Super Bowl 40 touchdown passes, like, in my initial read on, you know, like if I'm finding a perfect candidate to be the Geno Smith of 2023, Matthew Stafford's career is way too good. Like but just in terms of where he's going to be taken, he definitely fits this conversation. Obviously, if he stays healthy and Cooper Kupp stays healthy, though, Stafford is probably a fringy top 12 fantasy quarterback, and Kupp is, you know, maybe the wide receiver one.
So do we stretch the criteria enough to keep him as a finalist, or do we want to move on from him as one of our top
three guys? If we only have three finalists, he's not going to be one of mine.
Okay. Then, yeah, I agree. I do think the possibility exists for a really nice season, but I don't think he makes it. If we're putting out the graphic on social, it's like, this year's Geno Smith is Matthew Stafford. That's going to look worse than Frank made us look with the 49ers stuff. So I'm glad we're all on the same page. Let's keep Matthew Stafford off this list. Let's talk about the guy who Geno Smith outshined last year on the team that he used to play for, Russell Wilson. There's at least some steam for a Russell Wilson bounce back year. He's still QB17 in early rankings. Again, I think that perfectly represents, like, some people are going to buy in, some people are going to be all the way out. We just talked about the Broncos a second ago, where, like, I'm ready to believe anything. I'm ready to believe anybody's on this roster in 2024. That's including Russell Wilson. So where do you stand in terms of the Russell Wilson bounce back campaign? A guy who's by the way, if we want a guy who's become a punchline, Russell Wilson is a punchline. So he might fit this award, at least for that category.
Yeah, that's where this really works. And, you know, it's absolutely wonderful to have Russell Wilson in the conversation to be the Geno Smith of 2023, by the way. And he legitimately became, like, he was a literal punchline in the Nickelodeon game last year, right? Like, Patrick Starr had jokes about Russell Wilson in real time as he was throwing picks in that game. So he fits. Nobody's going to fight you for Russell Wilson. A lot of questions about, I mean, this team generally, like the Russell Wilson, Sean Payton collab that we're about to have is just one of the most fascinating storylines of the NFL season, because Wilson's tendencies, like when he's been at his best, it doesn't fit what you think of as you know, what Sean Payton wants to do. But Payton's had success throughout his NFL career with all kinds of quarterbacks. And it wouldn't be shocking if he had success with Russell Wilson, certainly a guy who's already, you know, probably put himself in the Hall of Fame. They built a wall for along the offensive line in the offseason. That's kind of fun. Like, we think this offensive line is going to be pretty good. I don't know that the receiving core is any good at all. Like, Jerry Jeudy, to me, you have been saying that you've been talking a lot about Jerry Jeudy over the last few days, so I won't make you do it again. But, like, he's just, at best case, he's like a great theoretical receiver at this point. We haven't seen it over a full year. So I don't know what they have in their receiving core. And, like, nobody else does either, right? Like, there's a bunch of offseason sunshine about Dulcich. We don't know the health of the backfield. Lot of variables here. It's fun to put him in this conversation. It's weird. Like, if you told me 2 years ago that he would be in a conversation like this, I'd be like, no way. But he has in fact become an actual punchline. So he fits here.
Am I an idiot for that? The fact that I can more easily envision Sam Howell or Jacoby Brissett having this season than Russell Wilson. Like, even if Russell Wilson has a good season, how good is it going to be? Because, like you mentioned, yeah. I'm so glad, like, you are among the, we'll let you in the reasonablest club when it comes to the Broncos receivers. There's a whole bunch of folks on the other side of the aisle that I can't deal with anymore. So, like, there's a lot of questions about this roster, and there's a lot of questions about Russell Wilson. I think if he has, like, know, 25 touchdowns and 10 picks. Like, hey, that might be a pretty good season for Russ. And like the Broncos can take some solace and they've built a nice thing around him. And they'll say, see you later in a couple of years. There's also a scenario where he's not even playing by week 8 because they want to get a look at Jarrett Stidham. You know, that's realistic too. I just struggled to keep put him on the finalists here because while the surprise of it and the punchline of it is certainly possible, I'm just not buying that it happens for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet on this happening, which is why I think he's a really interesting candidate here. It's really close. If you just gave me the Washington team quarterback and asked me to pick who's going to finish higher, like Washington team QB or Russell Wilson, I might go Washington. I mean, the reason that I have him buried in the ranks is that we don't have a starter yet. When we have a starter, if it's Sam Howell and there's a lot of buzz around Sam Howell and the whole damn league is saying the things that Dalton Del Don is saying, then I'll be at least as enthusiastic about him. I mean, I have greater faith in McLaurin and Dotson and Samuel being an excellent receiving core than I probably do Sutton and you know, Tim Patrick coming off an ACL and Jerry Jeudy at a huge hinge point in his career. We don't know what he is, right? Like, I don't know. Washington's receiving core is better.
I mean, definitely better. I'll say definitely. I have way more faith in those guys. So Russell Wilson, finalist for this list or no?
I like him as a finalist. Yeah.
Okay, fine. I'll
do I only relent. Get three finalists?
Yeah, but we can boot someone off. If we get to one and we feel better about it, we can boot somebody off. This is a living document here. Last thing, just cause you mentioned Russell Wilson probably has gotten himself in the Hall of Fame. I think I agree, but is there a scenario if let's just say the disaster scenario plays out for Russell Wilson this year and he's benched in the middle of the year and like his 2022 season is such a joke and this Denver thing, like it's going to go to, there's almost no way it won't go down as one of the worst trades of all time, even if he becomes like an average starting quarterback again, which by the way, I do think that is, like I said, I think that's possible. I think that is possible. Him recovering top five ceiling again, I feel like that's pretty unlikely, but was his Seahawks run so good that it would get him in the Hall of Fame just on that? Or if his career completely flames out like this, is he probably looking on the outside looking in?
So I actually think he's in the Hall of Fame right now and can play his way out.
Is a very rare thing to do, by the way, I think.
Right. But you know, this can happen, you know, this can happen with compilers too. And I'm not saying that Russell Wilson is a compiler, but like there's a ton of people who don't think of Frank Gore as an obvious Hall of Famer, because they remember like the final like 8 years of Frank Gore and they weren't around for Frank Gore as one of the legit, like, five best running backs in the game, could do it all, right? And they just think of him as a compiler. And so maybe, I don't know, in a lot of people's eyes, obviously Frank Gore, I think, is a Hall of Famer, but may have played his way out, right? And this can happen. You hang around too long. Like if part of the story of Russell Wilson ends up being that he just absolutely cratered an era of for the Denver Broncos, like that's a negative. That's gonna take some Hall of Fame points away. I think he's in right now. But the next, you know, if he just walked away, like if he just walked away after this season, during this season, right now at this point in his career, I think he's in. But if he plays out another 2 or 3 years and it's really ugly, he can still exit the conversation.
I think I agree with you, which is why it's a rather fascinating conversation. All right, next guy on the list here, Jordan Love. Certainly could fit from a punchline standpoint, right? Like the most the Packers have gotten out of the Jordan Love first round pick so far is that they motivated Aaron Rodgers to two MVP awards, allegedly. So not a great use of a first round pick. Necessarily. I mean, hey, I guess you could talk yourself into it. You put yourself in a brain pretzel and say, like, hey, if we use the first round pick to get the best out of Aaron Rodgers for a few years and not win a Super Bowl still, whatever, I guess that's fine. But regardless, we don't know who Jordan Love is. It's certainly been a bit of a punchline to this point in his career. The thing I think I struggle with here about Jordan Love being a top five, you know, fantasy quarterback, or like in the conversation as like a top 10 real life NFL quarterback by the end of this year, even if Love is really, really, really good, like this receiver core is so young. It's kind of underrated how young everybody around Jordan Love is. Like Jordan Love doesn't have a DeAndre Hopkins type or something, like a reliable veteran that, hey, I can feed this guy 130, 140 targets and go to work. I like Christian Watson. I don't know that Christian Watson is going to ever be that guy, or if he's shown anything in his rookie year to be, I think he's shown he could be a really, really good explosive playmaker, but not necessarily that. I love Jaden Reed, their rookie receiver, mm-hmm. but he's a rookie receiver, right? I mean, maybe he becomes that guy right away, but still, he's a rookie receiver. And Romeo Doubs, he's a hit as a day three draft pick, but I think he's probably like a number three receiver. Their tight end room is super young. Aaron Jones is like the only, the running backs, AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones, like the only skill position guys we know who they are, I think at this point. So that's where I struggle with Jordan Love, but I think he deserves to be at least discussed on this list.
I think he's a, I agree that he should be part of this conversation. I could be my own lack of imagination, and maybe that's why he's a good name for this list. I really struggle with his path to being a QB1, right? Like a top 10 fantasy quarterback. But he fits because even though he's barely played, right? He's had like basically a 3-year apprenticeship or whatever. He's barely played. He started one game, lost it, didn't look good. I think there's talent in the receiving mm-hmm. core. Certainly, I think Reed is a really interesting player. Christian Watson, incredible athlete who was really clicking with Rodgers. Obviously, had some ugly moments, had some special moments, right? And could be a thing down the road. Love's got a great receiving back at his disposal in Jones. That's good. I think people prematurely have a notion of what they think he is based on very little on field, like in season NFL action. So I think he's an interesting name for this list from that perspective. I don't have a great notion on what he is. And I'm trying to keep an open mind about it because, like, even in college, right? Like he had one big collegiate season. And it wasn't his final year. That's always a little bit weird to me. So there's a lot of question marks about the player, a lot of question marks about the team context too. It would shock me if he were a top 10 fantasy quarterback, but he does have the job. He's, you know, there's no question there, right? Like he's going to be the quarterback for this team. It is obviously an important season in terms of the trajectory of the Packers going forward, in terms of the trajectory of Jordan Love's career. Really interesting. I just don't think, I don't know, again, could be my own lack of imagination. I can't imagine a top 10 positional finish for him.
Yeah. I'm sort of ready to believe anything with Jordan Love as well, you know, like that he could be a great quarterback or he could just go out there and this could look like a total disaster for the Green Bay Packers. Honestly, kind of for your sake, Andy, as a Bears fan, I'm hoping he doesn't come out there and become a top 10 fantasy. That might be you coping a little bit, but let's hope. Right. Cause
that is the absolute nightmare situation for me. The nightmare situation for me is that like Justin Fields doesn't get any better. And Jordan Love, who by the way, is still like Jordan Love's like 24. You know, it feels like he's been with us for a while. He's still like 24 years old. And then Jordan Love is great for the next decade. That is the absolute nightmare scenario for me.
Because you're my friend, that literally sent a shiver down my spine. And I think for that reason, also because he's a first round, like a former first round pick, I don't necessarily think he makes a ton of sense as a finalist here for us. Also because we don't seem too convinced that ceiling is there. So I think we keep him off the finalist list if that's okay with you.
It is, yes. I don't need to talk about the Packers 1 second longer.
Perfect. All right. Before we get to our let's get weird options, I think we also have to talk about Geno Smith again for this award, because he is QB 14 right now in early fantasy rankings. And like, he could easily be a top 5 quarterback again. Like I talked about that skill set or skill position guys that are around him. The room is, everything is better this year. The wide receiver core, they took the first wide receiver off the board, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. It is a little hilarious being like, I was told Jaxon Smith-Njigba doesn't have speed while he's like got a, you know, he got a touchdown on Devin Witherspoon, the fellow rookie, off like a chip play. OTA highlight season is in full effect. OTA highlight victory lap season is in full effect. Yeah. Enjoy the highlights all you want. Please don't take a victory lap off an off-season highlight. That is begging to be roasted. That aside, receiver room's better. They added another running back to the mix. I still wish they had improved the interior of the offensive line, which I think actually brought Geno's performance down a little bit last year. That could be one sort of hang up, but otherwise this offense is ready to rock. coming into this year, Andy?
Yeah, it feels a little bit weird to say that Geno Smith himself is not a candidate to be the Geno Smith of 2023. But like, as we think about what Geno was coming into last year, you know, not drafted. I'm sure there were super flex leagues where Geno Smith was not drafted, right? Like smallish pools, stuff like that. Like, legitimately undrafted. We're not talking about somebody who was like a late flyer. We're not talking about somebody who was like, you know, the guy who takes the last quarterback in the draft took him, which is probably where he'll be last this year, right? Like, coming into this season, I feel like the person who waits on quarterback is going to feel pretty smug because they're still going to end up with like Deshaun Watson or Geno Smith or somebody from that group, right? And Geno Smith is the guy who gets to throw to Metcalf and Lockett and JSN. And it's just an obviously great situation. And he's coming off a 30 touchdown season. And he was recently very good. And there's no job security issue. This can definitely happen. I mean, he just did it, right? Like, obviously this can happen. Now that he's done it, it's not going to shock me if he runs it back and does it again.
Dude, because you just brought this up, I remembered, I took Geno Smith in the Scott Fish Bowl in the 20th round last year. The 20th round of the Scott Fish Bowl. Everybody is drafted in the Scott Fish Bowl. It's a super, like, you could play two quarterbacks. Geno Smith in the 20th round. Listen to some of these names that were taken in my draft ahead of Geno Smith. Desmond Ridder. Okay, I get it. Randall Cobb. Brian Edwards. Abraham Smith. I don't even know who Abraham Smith is. Trey Sermon, Snoop Connor, Chris Conley was, and I'm not being mean to anybody that was in this league with me, but like, that's where Geno Smith was last year. Dude, even Jacoby Brissett was taken in the 20th round. Like, I mean, what are we doing here? Like, with Geno Smith last year. So yeah, I think you're right that Geno Smith is too good and too highly thought of to be the Geno Smith of this year.
Which is a wild sentence, but I think it's undeniably true.
Well, it certainly makes sense for this unhinged podcast series, this wild of sentence. So, all right, Andy, any other nominations before we have our two Let's Get Weird nominations here?
No, I want to get to the eventual winner, the obvious candidate.
Okay, for God's sakes. All right, Andy, we have two. I just decided to bucket this as the Let's Get Weird segment. Go ahead. Take it away. Take it away.
I mean, there's one name in the NFL that fits this conversation perfectly, perfectly, note for note, and it's Baker Mayfield. If you want to talk about a guy who's a punchline coming into the year, like, this is it, right? Like, we all, especially over the last two seasons, we all have jokes about Baker Mayfield. let's remember, he came into the league with a 27 touchdown pass season in a year in which, you know, his primary receivers were like Jarvis Landry, Young Njoku, Antonio Callaway, right? Rashad Higgins. Like, it wasn't great. And he still had a really good year. So like, he's put some moments on film that are quite good. Averaged 7.7 yards per attempt as a rookie. Won the offensive rookie of the year. He's got an 11 win season as the starting quarterback. So like, I'm almost making the case that he has been too good at points in his career to even qualify as the Geno Smith, except that now he is so clearly a punchline of a quarterback and we have zero expectations for Baker. I think he was just objectively better as an NFL quarterback than Geno prior to Geno's 2022. But then obviously we all know the reasons that Baker has become a punchline as well. He also has a 20 plus interception season on the resume. A mess with Cleveland at the end, then a mess with Carolina. But in the same way that Geno had, you know, nice little moment in 2021 in relief of Russell Wilson, we have this little turn that Baker's career took at the end of last season, right, with the Rams. Not to say that it was like some incredible win streak or anything like that, but he gets just sort of parachuted into an impossible situation in like in December in a primetime game on a Thursday night. He's he's barely had time with the playbook. He hasn't yet been introduced to any of his new teammates, and he comes out and leads a come from behind win against a terrible team. But like, led a come from behind win. It was really fun. His team destroyed Denver on Christmas in the Nickelodeon game. Fun piece of trivia here. Who's the only quarterback in the history of the game to win a Heisman and the Nickelodeon MVP? It's Baker Mayfield, right? So he's got that going for him.
Yeah,
he's,
Mitch,
he's
Mitch one of doesn't one in that account there. So there you go.
Nope. The other thing I like about this in terms of lining him up with the Geno Smith story is that he's going to be throwing to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin.
Yeah.
So he's got some real dudes. I'm giving him the job. He doesn't necessarily have this job yet, right? Like, he's theoretically in this battle with Kyle Trask, but everybody, like, it's off season. It's the middle of summer and people, but you're already hearing the, oh wow, we really like Baker Mayfield's moxie. Do I think Baker Mayfield is going to be a top five fantasy quarterback? No, I can't get through the sentence without laughing. But do I think Baker Mayfield could, like, I don't know. Can I imagine a scenario where he sneaks into the top 12? I can.
Oh my God. Okay. You really kind of convinced me at least a little bit with the argument, mostly because you bring up the receivers. Like, Russell Gage is also still on this team, you know? I mean, this is a really good receiver core. Mike Evans, I think, took a small step back last year as an individual player, but Chris Godwin should take a small step forward this year, being farther removed from the ACL. Russell Gage, like, I mean, he was just banged up the entire year, but I do think he's a pretty nice slot receiver. The funny thing with the Bucs is, like, they definitely did the Titans thing where everybody wanted them to rebuild, everybody wanted them to blow it up, and then they didn't do that, but they also didn't add anything other than Baker Mayfield at quarterback, which made it a weird kind of offseason. I agree with you. I think he's going to start over Kyle Trask. Like, I'm not convinced that Kyle Trask is even like an NFL quarterback based on some of the evaluations I've read of him. I do think the Rams tenure for Baker Mayfield is a little bit seen with rose-colored glasses because we all saw the Raiders moment and we all saw the Broncos game, which he completed 85.7% of his passes, 230 yards, two touchdowns, 124.7 quarterback rating, but against a team that was literally fighting each other on the sideline and fired their head coach like the next day after Christmas, you know? So I kind of want to put an asterisk to that. The rest of it was typical Baker Mayfield disaster, basically. So, but yeah, I mean, I guess he may, like, I'm trying to talk to myself from last year is trying to talk to me this year and being like, hey dude, you would have said all the same stuff about not just like you would have said the same stuff about the quality of receivers in Tampa Bay and Seattle, even though I think Seattle's duo was better and definitely is better now. But you would have laughed. You called Geno and Drew Lock an unserious quarterback situation, and you're probably doing the same thing here right now. So I don't know, man, you've got me a little convinced to put him as a finalist. The last guy I'll mention though is Sam Darnold, who I think a guy we don't know is going to start, probably is not going to start. Frankly, I hope we don't see him start. But if he does, he's in a way better situation than any of the dudes we talked about here on this list today. Great receivers, awesome setup there with Kyle Shanahan. I just think, like, in a realistic world, I mean, the most I've seen out of Sam Darnold, by the way, in the offseason videos is like he tripped over himself the other day. So I don't think that's realistic. And his best play is still worse than Baker Mayfield's best play. So I don't think Sam Darnold really actually fits on this list, but he was in my Let's Get Weird segment. But you want Baker Mayfield as a finalist, Andy, I'm going to let you have it because you made a good argument for it.
I think it needs to happen. I actually think there's a, like, if we wanted to go, like, this would be super complicated with the Niners, but if just let's say the quarterback for that team is not Brock Purdy, if it's anybody else, team quarterback for the Niners, like, Trey Lance fits the discussion as well. Like, a lot of people are probably just out on Trey Lance. Yeah. Certainly almost everybody is out on Sam Darnold. And yet, you can't find a richer situation in terms of talent in a receiving core, unbelievably quarterback friendly offense. So it is a spectacular situation for anybody who steps in.
All right, well, if we're fully on board, our three finalists are Washington football team quarterback, either Sam Howell or Jacoby Brissett, Russell Wilson, and Baker Mayfield. I mean, there's there's few quarterbacks more so than those two that have, like, and I'm not talking about like the dregs of the league type, but like established quarterbacks who have irritated me more the last really 4 years, honestly, than Russell Wilson and Baker Mayfield. So this is a very painful exercise for me. But Andy, I'll let you rank these three in terms of most likely to be the this year's Geno Smith to least likely, 1 to 3.
Yeah, well, you know where I'm going. I think, again, I think Baker Mayfield is the perfect candidate to be the, like, again, across the board, aligning it with everything that had happened to Geno Smith prior to 2022 with the setup that he has this season. I think Baker Mayfield is the strongest possible candidate. He's at the top of my list. Number two is definitely the Washington quarterback situation, which, if I'm being honest, maybe that's a little bit more realistic because I love that receiving core as well. And then number three is Russell Wilson. I can't wait to see what it looks like with Sean Payton. There's probably a better than 50% chance that it looks bad for a while. But I'm super anxious to see this pairing of quarterback and head coach. And we can't rule out the possibility that Russell returns to something close to his former self.
All right. So for me, I'm going Washington Football Team quarterback at number one. They are my number one pick to be this year's Geno Smith. It's hilarious. I'm talking about two people, but it's the point stands. Whoever that guy's starting there, I feel really good about their outlook this year because of those receivers and because of Eric Bieniemy. I feel great about that. Number two, I'm gonna go with Baker Mayfield at number two.
You
moved me just a little bit. You moved me just a little bit here. And again, I am. It's like a write-in vote, really, for Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. It's why I'm doing this, but because it makes so, and because he makes so much like he actually really, if you want to just talk about vagabond veteran rags to riches, a punchline, becomes a like gets his career back on track. He does, I think, actually fit the best of this group. And then three is Russell Wilson for me. It's hilarious that, like, the guy that we talked about, does he have Hall of Fame potential earlier in the podcast is the one we both agree is the third pick here. But that's where we stand. So that means a first place vote and a second place vote for Baker and a second place vote and a first place vote for Washington Football Team. They are tied here, which means, Colin, for the third episode in a row on this series, you get the right to break the tie. And I hate that I said this because, Andy, I learned the lesson on the 49ers one. If you let the producer vote for it, they will vote for the thing that is the most sizzling one. And I think I know where that's going to be. So, Colin, break the tie.
I do have to say, what a downfall from the previous tiebreakers in terms of just the people we're picking from. But unlike last time where I picked the juicy one, I don't think I can bring myself to creating a Baker Mayfield graphic. I don't know, but
yes,
I got to go with Harmon today. And the reason being is Jacoby Brissett wasn't bad last year with the Browns. And I think he's in a much better wide receiver skill position situation this year. If you read to the tea leaves, Ron Rivera's already hinted that they like where Jacoby is, then Sam Howell's had bad and good days like any young quarterback is. So I actually legitimately see a season where it's Jacoby Brissett. And I think I can see Jacoby Brissett having a very good statistical year. And, you know, Washington makes the playoffs. You know, the last time that the Washington franchise won a playoff game or had a real run, excluding the RG3 year, was 2006. And that was a year Todd Collins was the December quarterback, I think, player of the year. So I feel this energy. I feel Jacoby Brissett can have a Todd Collins 2006 type year, and I'm gonna give it to Jacoby Brissett. If you're okay with that, Harmon.
Let the record show that we were not discussing the Todd Collins of 2023. We were discussing the Geno Smith 2023. I like that Colin has sort of outed himself here as a secret Washington fan.
Absolutely should have guessed that.
I'm disgusted. This is just more fuel to the fire for Baker Mayfield, by the way. Let's clip this and make sure that Baker sees it.
Great. Yeah, definitely make sure. Yeah, tag Baker on Twitter. Fun fact about Todd Collins, he was involved in the first Panthers game I ever went to in real life, which is during the 2012 season against your Chicago Bears, Andy. And I'm Todd Collins had he completed six passes, six of 16 passes for 32 yards and four interceptions, and the Bears won that game. If you ever are looking for a laugh, go back and look up the box score of that game. I promise you it's the most hilarious thing you've ever seen. And my God, what a I can't imagine why I'm not a Panthers fan anymore. But that might have been the first knife in the heart. So I'm glad that we got down on the right side of history here. I really wanted to make Washington the this year's Jaguars, but we ended up going with the Falcons. So it's good for the Washington Commanders bros to win one here. Basically, again, this is a right similar to the Baker Mayfield thing would have been. It's a write in vote for really for Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson and Curtis Samuel, the most underrated wide receiver trio in the entire NFL. And my last point to you, Andy, when you started talking about Baker Mayfield, it erupted into an outrageous thunderstorm here at the beach. In So not a good sign. Just saying, not a good sign.
Maybe that is a good omen. Maybe that's the heavens opening up and saying, finally a little bit of truth on this podcast. Oh man, I'm so here for a Baker Mayfield revival.
Well, hey, if it happens, you heard it here first. Andy gets to take the victory lap. Andy, I appreciate you, buddy. This was awesome. You more than rose to the occasion for this nonsense off-season series, especially this particular nonsense topic. Appreciate you doing this, man. And hey, you moved me from no way in hell to Baker Mayfield to he almost won this thing. He almost took it down.
I feel good about that. Anytime you want me to drag you down into like the real swamp and start talking about some bad players, I think I'm your man.
Hey, that's why you were on the waiver episode this past year, but we're going to figure out a way to get you talking about some good players here on the podcast this year, Andy. That is my promise to you. My promise to you, the listener, is as much fun as we just had talking about bad quarterbacks, we're about to talk to a great quarterback and have a lot of fun. We've got Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen on the show discussing the unveiling of the Madden cover art this year. He is the cover artist. He talks to us about it. Let's check it out. All right, we've got an awesome guest on the pod now. It's Josh Allen, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, quarterback of the Buffalo Bills. You may have heard of him. Josh, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm just hanging out, man. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Most importantly, why you're here today is we are excited to announce and to congratulate you on the announcement of being the cover athlete for this year's Madden. I mean, Josh, you're younger than me for sure, but I would say we came up in the same generation. That's such a huge, exciting thing. I'm sure you're just like totally geeked out about the entire thing.
I'm so incredibly happy. I can't really put into words how much this means to me. And the goal was never to be on the cover of Madden, but to now be the cover athlete. And again, it's the year after John Madden, and to be able to share, this little fraternity with some of the best to ever play the game. It's unbelievable. It's very surreal for me. I grew up playing it. I learned the game of football by playing Madden. And I've got so many fond memories of me, my brother, and my dad playing Madden against each other. So, it definitely means a lot to me and my family. And, it's such a huge honor.
It's pretty cool for you to say that, like, you learned the game of football by playing Madden, obviously, because you're playing it now at the peak of the profession, right? You're one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And, for somebody like me, I did not play in the NFL. I do not play in the NFL. But, like, I feel as if I learned the game and took a deeper insight into schemes and players and where guys fit and where lining up and everything and, route combinations, defensive coverages, stuff like that. Like, I can tell you what a cover three defense is because of playing Madden, or me, like, at 13, 12, 11 years old could tell you what cover three was because of playing Madden. So I don't know. Tell me a little bit about, like, some of the memories you have about the game kind of coming up and, transitioning to what that means now being on the cover of it.
Yeah, I mean, again, like you said, learning concepts, learning coverages, learning schemes, 3-4, 4-3, penalties, offsides, false starts, holding, roughing the passer. My brother would always try to, hit my quarterback as late as he could. Sometimes we would turn the penalties off so we can, try to do that. But
nice.
I'll tell you what, one of early memories for me, right? Like getting out of the car and running straight to my room, trying to race my brother to see who can get first controller so we can be the home team, So it means so much to me playing my dad. I remember playing him all the time and And I was back on the PlayStation 1, and it was just two bumpers on the back, and those were the juke buttons, right? And I think my earliest Madden that I remember playing was Madden 03. It was Marshall Fox year. And again, like you remember the covers, you remember the faces, you remember the guys that were on the cover of Madden. And now to be sitting here saying that I'm going to be on Madden 24, and I was in junior college not too long ago, right? So like, it's a very surreal experience for me. And I can't thank EA and Madden enough for allowing me to have this opportunity.
Yeah, I grew up with three sisters. I don't have any brothers, but like my best friend growing up he is like my brother, best man at my wedding, the whole thing. And had similar experiences, you know, we're like racing each other to get the first controller. We used to do like franchise modes and would sim until we could play each other, the whole thing. So I feel like everybody has that bond with like a brother or a friend or something, like playing that. I mean, real cool guy stuff, you know, being like 16, 17 yeah. years old and duking it out over Madden. That's when you know you've really, really hit peak of popularity.
Yes. And it develops a really good bond, a really good friend. Like if you're not good friends with somebody and you're playing the wrong guy, that could ruin a friendship because,
oh, yeah.
I mean, me and my brother, right? We would try to time up where we would pause the button, like press pause while one of us was kicking, you know, the game winning field goal to try to mess us up, you know? So like it caused quite a few discrepancies in the household.
Hey, you talk about some of the other cover athletes. I think one that everybody comes back to is 2004 Michael Vick. Up. I mean, that was just talk about unfair. I'm sure there were friendships lost over, like you did some horrible, disgusting things to me on Madden with 2004 Michael Vick. Stack up 2004 Michael Vick as a Madden player and 2024 Josh Allen as a Madden player. Who are we taking?
I mean, Mike Vick is a cheat code, absolute cheat. Like I think everybody, as soon as you turn that game on, you were picking the Falcons to play with, you know? Yeah. So I think there's a little bit in terms of like the mobile quarterbacks, there's a few other options, but like Mike Vick was like, he was it, you know? So everybody wanted that. So you got to go with Mike Vick, you know, but this cover is going to be awesome. Western New York is going to be extremely thrilled for this. And I'm so happy that, you know, they're going to feel like they get some of the respect that they deserve. And, you know, this is a city that's contributed a lot to football, and it's such a great fan base. And, it's something that they deserve it a little bit, you know? And
yeah.
But I think that most importantly, they deserve a Lombardi trophy. And that's what I'm trying to bring here. And that's I'm going to work tirelessly until me and my teammates get that done.
Yeah. I mean, last time we talked to you on the show with Austin Eckler, that was like one of the things you talked about was just what that fan base meant to you. And I think it's really cool that you think about, hey, I can give this as like a part, like they're winning or they're taking home some of this honor a little bit themselves. I think that's really cool. So let's talk about the Bills this year, man. You know, I think the offense last year, like the first half of the season, I think you guys were really clicking on a level where you were sort of, you felt to me like you had evolved as a quarterback because you're taking some of those layups and it was just really impressive to watch. What does the offense have to do to take sort of another step in year two with Ken Dorsey as the offensive coordinator?
Yeah, you know, I think it's me being an extension of Coach Dorsey and just developing a better sense of, you know, what he's calling, why he's calling this. All right, what does he want me to do in this situation? Because again, like he's got the microphone and it's not a two way. So like, as soon as he calls the play, it's in my ear and I don't get to ask him like, all right, Doris, why are you calling this? You know? So understanding that a little bit more. And again, just being more prepared, you know, with myself and taking accountability and making sure that I'm relaying the right information to my receivers, my tight ends, my running backs, making sure that I'm on the same page of protection with my alignment. So just diving deeper into our scheme. And again, just learning, continuing to learn nuances of what defenses are trying to do from us or do to us and, how to combat that. So, it's definitely, there's a lot of work to do. But I'm eager and I'm excited about the opportunity and I love what we're doing in OTAs right now and some of the concepts that we've got going on, some of the guys that we've brought into, you know, our building that are going to help us out immensely. So looking forward to it.
Last time you and I spoke, like I mentioned on the show with Austin, you and I talked about your connection, your chemistry, your relationship with Stephon Diggs, and we know what he brings to the table. But I think like you kind of mentioned, you brought in some guys to potentially add something beyond Diggs, beyond Stephon. So Dalton Kincaid, first round pick, tight end. You know, it's typically, Josh, people kind of set expectations low for tight ends in their first season, second season, because it's a big transition going from the college to pro game. But I thought this was pretty interesting. I saw a quote from you where you were saying, you know, I didn't think he was going to be there the time we were picking this of Dalton Kincaid. You said you were pretty persistent in your talks with Bills general manager Brandon Bean. Tell me a little bit about Dalton and what you think he is going to bring to this offense and where he might line up most. And should we be setting our expectations high in year one and year two?
I don't know exactly how he's going to work into our offense yet. We're still trying to work through some of that. And we probably still won't know until we get into the season. But, you know, the whole thought process was like, you know, you put out him and Dawson out there and we're in 12 personnel. Do teams want to go sub? Do they want to go base? And then there's matchup nightmares too. Like if you want to put a linebacker on, which linebacker are you going to put, or who are you going to put the linebacker on? Who are you going to put the safety on? So there's that. And then again, you look outside and you got Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs and, you know, a couple guys that we brought in with Trent Sherfield and Hardy, and then Khalil Shakir, having him his second year in the system. You know, so we're excited. Obviously there's a lot of work to do. We're not where we want to be by any means. So we're going to continue to work hard, but I'm definitely like, I love the dynamic that, you know, Dawson and Dalton bring and how, I guess, they can play off each other. I think they're similar in a way, but I think they're completely different football players. And I think that's a very good thing.
Hey, you talk about Madden up at the top and concepts and personnel groupings. You get a player, you know, at the tight end position that you could split out and play that slot receiver a little bit too. If you come out there at 12 personnel, that's when you get the linebacker on the tight end. Again, even like basic level Madden players know that could potentially be a real mismatch and a difference maker for your offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's kind of up to Doris and our coaching staff in terms of like putting our players in best positions to succeed. And again, me going out there and making sure I'm on the same page with them and trying to get them the ball as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And like you said, it's normal right now for people to say, we don't know how the guy's going to fit into our offenses yet because the games haven't started and it's an evolving process. So I'm really excited to watch you guys this year. I think it's going to be year one in a system change or coaching change can always be, you know, they're different chapters of the season. I think you guys can really click it this year. I love that you brought up Khalil Shakir's name. I'm a big fan of him and obviously a big fan of Stephon Diggs there in that wide receiver room. Last thing for you, Josh, I appreciate your time. AFC East, Aaron Rodgers, your golfing buddy, basically, comes into the AFC East there, makes that division that much more competitive. How are we feeling about, you know, this whole conference in general, man, is so stacked. How does Buffalo come up on top of this conference, man? I mean, there's just so much going on with the good quarterback play in the AFC right now. And Josh, you having Aaron Rodgers come into the division just adds a little more to it.
Yeah, for sure. You know, he's one of the greatest ever, if not the greatest ever, to put it on. He's the most talented thrower of the football I've ever seen. I'm such a big fan of him. I grew up idolizing him and wanting to emulate him when I was on the field. And so it is really cool and it's surreal to kind of have a friendship and a relationship that I have with him. It's I don't take it for granted, for sure. Yeah, you know, every time we step on the field, it's like we're not friends, we're enemies. But like, I don't play the opposing quarterback, right? I play the opposing defense and play the opposing defensive coordinator. So I do know that I got to score more points than him. So when every time I step on the field, maybe there is that added sense of like, all right, I got to lock in here. Like we got to find a way to move the ball and score points. But in terms of the mindset, it doesn't change. Like every time we step on the field as an offense, we want to go score a touchdown. I can't really focus or worry about what the other guys are doing. I just got to continue to try to do what I can do and be the best quarterback and teammate for the Buffalo Bills.
Josh Allen, cover of Madden this year. Incredible stuff. Really appreciate your time today, man. And, you know, congrats on everything so far and everything that's yet to come.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you for having me on.
All right. That's going to do it for Thursday's pod. Shout out to Andy Behrens again. Baker Mayfield's number one fan. Andy Behrens, never forget it. You heard it here first. And of course, a quarterback from the same draft that's actually really great at the game, Josh Allen, joining the show. Shout out to Josh. That was an awesome conversation about Madden, memories, and what Dalton Kincaid's role might be in the offense. I thought that was fascinating. We are back next Tuesday with Scott Pianowski joining me for the next installment of our Flip the Script series. Who is this year's Philadelphia Eagles? Oh, what a breath of fresh air that's going to be as we try to identify the team that goes from good to great in 2023. Until then, we're out.